So this is kind of a preliminary report of some work that Joseph Schoenmoshe and I have been looking at not so long ago, and it deals with one of the favorite topics in additive combinatorics, Ramsey and N-cubes. So let me give you a flavor for what's involved. So we have n-tuples, binary n-tuples of 0 and 1. It's my super powered laser. I can never see the wimpy ones. You know. Get these little guys here. Is that on? This is this goes 6,000 feet. Good. And so we have also here the set D of N, which you can think of as kind of the all the diagonals. We have an N cube and all possible line segments joining pairs. And as it says here, you can think of these as vertices and kind of all the diagonals of an N cube. Come back here. Okay. And with a subset I of 1 to N, we'll say that two of these n-tuples are I complementary if they only agree outside of I. That is, on I, they differ. So they're complementary on I, outside of I, they agree. And you can define a line as just a set of all these pairs, X and Y, which are I complementary. So in particular, the number of pairs on a line is just 2 to the I, the cardinality of I, and all the ways of choosing X and Y that are complementary. We'll say that L of I has dimension, cardinality of I. And every one of these pairs lies on a unique line, namely just take the I to be the places where they disagree. So there's kind of a graphical, schematic way of thinking about this. So here we have the subsets and also the subsets of a 0, 1 to the n. And here's a line here. So these are complementary pairs. And by a corner, we're going to meet a set of 3 points. So xy and then xy prime and x prime y. So that x, y prime, and x prime y are on a common line. So you can think of these, actually if you want, we'll see geometrically a little bit more. These points are kind of representing main diagonals of some affine subcube. But this is kind of a schematic picture, where here you can think of a binary tree. You can think of this as kind of a binary tree kind of tilted at 45 degrees with one level, and that's kind of the root. And more generally, you can imagine a binary tree with m levels with a root. It's just formed from joining two smaller binary trees to that common root. So, for example, here's a binary tree with 3 levels. So here's the root, and it's joined to 2 binary trees with 2 levels, and each one is a binary tree with 1 level. So you have this kind of iterated structure in this grid. Okay. Well, here's the kind of a typical theorem. It says for all R, think of R as the number of colors, and M, there's some large number, so that if N is as large as N naught, and all these points, that is all these pairs, are arbitrarily R colored, then you'll find some monochromatic, a single color, binary tree with M levels. So again, and geometrically you're thinking of coloring, actually they're kind of direct diagonals in an N cube, but we won't worry about that right now. So it's just a typical Ramsey theorem, partition theorem, that says for any number of colors, any number of levels, if the grid is big enough, if your subsets are large enough, you can always find a monochromatic binary tree. And there's kind of an idea that's kind of the main idea. So let me show. In fact, you can take Rn to be actually not so big. It's just a simple exponential in R and M. So here's kind of a sketch of what happens, and I'll do 2 steps, and then you'll see, of course, it has to work. So N's going to be large if you specify it later. Often you promise to specify it later, but by the time later comes, you don't actually do it, but I will do it. And suppose you R-color all these points. I'm going to look at the 2 to the N points on this line. This is kind of a line that consists of all pairs of complementary vectors. So it's kind of the largest dimensional line. And there are colored, so you're going to look at that subset of the most popular color. Most popular color occurs at least one arth of the time, so this set has at least that cardinality. Okay, well, we're going to look at the grid formed by those points. Namely, I'm going to take, for each pair of points in S0, I'm going to look at kind of the corner, the intersection, XY prime, of all pairs in my set S0. So that's that grid. So there's lots of points here. In fact, how many points are there? Well, G0, certainly every pair of points in S0 generates one of those intersection points. So I'm very generous here, giving a 1/4. And so you have the definition of alpha 1, some positive fraction of all possible grid points. So you have a positive fraction, a dense set. G1 is pretty dense. Okay. Well, let's call a line of dimension T small if T is less than n over 3. So it doesn't have so many points on it. And furthermore, let's call it deficient if it intersects this grid G1 in less than alpha 1 times 2 to the t points. So it could have, you know, a line of dimension t has 2 to the t points on it, but it doesn't hit it very much. Good. Well, the total number of points on smaller deficient lines, and what we're going to do is throw all those away, is an easy calculation here. For example, these are the dimensions small, and once you pick the t places where they disagree, as n choose t, and that line has 2 to the t points, and the 2 to the n minus t choices for the points that are fixed. That is, you know, you have to pick. And the same calculation over here for deficient ones. And when you do that, and kind of simplify this a little bit, kind of a little algebraic manipulation, and the key fact here, using the fact that the sum of the binomial coefficients up to n over 3 is pretty small compared to 2 to the n. It's only less than 1.196 to the n. And you finally find that the points that you've thrown away are less than half the points. You only, these deficient or small line points get thrown away, provided alpha 1 is large enough. So that's something to kind of keep in mind. Okay, well, discard these points. You still have at least half of them remaining in G1. All of these points are on good lines by definition. We threw all the bad lines away. Well, okay. Take a good line. Say it has dimension n1. Well, it's at least n over 3, but not small. And furthermore, it also hits the grid in a large number of points because we threw all those away. Okay, good. Now, S1 is a set of points on that line with the most popular color, C1. Well, okay, at least one arth of the points have that color. Good. Now look at the grid formed by S1. That's the same idea. And the key point is that G2 is a subset of G1. If G1 is formed by taking corners from points on this L1, and you get these points, now if you take corners on L2, you see these are still corners from the original grid. They have this transitivity. And that's kind of a key thing here. So, and therefore G2 is pretty big. That's the definition of alpha 2. Still a positive fraction of all the possible points. Okay, as before, a line is dimension T is small. Now you have N1 instead of N, or deficient. And same calculation shows if you throw away all these points and these bad lines, you still have half of the points remaining, provided you have this inequality here. And now take a good line, and so forth, dimension. And now you just kind of keep this up for RM steps. So you have all these good lines, or these good S's, that are all monochromatic. That is, they're all a particular color. But if you do this RM steps, and by the way, the alphas grow like each alpha is about the square of the preceding one, divided by 2R. So if you kind of follow that up, well, also these dimensions don't go down by more than a factor of 3 each time, and you're going to have to keep this true for all I, which is a little harder if ni is smaller, But if you follow that recurrence, you'll see that alpha k is like 1 over c times 2 to the k. So it's a double exponential. You can see how you get this squaring all the time. And in particular, you can check that everything is satisfied now if n is bigger than c times 6 to the rm. Okay, so you have this binary tree in there, so to speak. But there must be m indices then where all these sets have the same color. Only have r colors. In fact, I even overdid it a little bit. So once you have all these with the same color, the binary tree on those gives you exactly what you want. And that's the end of the story. So you see this kind of these dense grids, each time forming this subgrids, but still keeping it fairly large. Now, the interpretation, as I mentioned, you have, again, vertices of the cube, line segments, and you can call a pair of points, this edge is a main diagonal, if every coordinate is a complement of the other coordinate. So it's as different as it can be. In an affine k-cube, it's a subset of 2 to the k points, where for some n-element subset, I mean some k-element subset i, they disagree, otherwise they agree. So this is just the same definition as before. And finally, you'll say the three connected diagonals of the form xy, yz, xz form a self-crossing path, which I'll denote it by that. If xy and zw are both main diagonals of some cube, and you just have one edge in between them. So you have a subcube, two main diagonals, and the interpretation is this corollary here. Again, any R coloring of the edges in Ln is a monochromatic self-crossing path if n is large enough. And same argument should work for subgraphs in general of this graph if it has enough edges, but we haven't quite pushed all that through yet. Here's another application, partial Hales-Jewett lines. Okay, so you have this conclusion. For every R, there's some number n with the following property. If you R color the four tuples formed from 0, 1, 2, 3 to the n, and n is large enough, then you can always find three sets of the following form. Well, what is this form? Well, this form is every column is either constant or it goes 0, 1, 2, or it goes 3, 2, 1. Well, first of all, it's not the full fourth point for the Hales-Jewett line, and I allowed something to go down rather than just going up. But something, right? And again, the idea of the proof is pretty simple. You just interpret points here, 0, 1, 2, 3, associate a pair of binary n-tuples just by the rule that each coordinate xk will generate a pair ak and bk according just to binary expansion. And if you do that, interpret what these monochromatic corners are, it gives you the desired partial Hales-Jewett line. And so, for example, if you take, here's a particular corner in our binary setup. So this 110 is kind of the constant part, and then this is the complementary part on this line, and this is this corner here. And if you kind of reinterpret what these points are in the Hales-Jewett situation, you get these three, which if you rearrange them, is just one of these promised partial Hales-Jewett line. Well, notice that if in this Hales-Jewett partial line situation, if you associate each n-tuple with the integer, who's the product of pi to the ai, where pi is the ith prime, then three points like this correspond to a geometric progression. So you get geometric progressions, which is not a big deal, but at least you get something. Also, for example, if you map the points in the 0, 1, 2, 3 to the n into points into f3 to the n, where f3 is just the field with three elements, so 0 or 3 goes into 0, and 1 goes to 1, 2 goes to 2, then the interpretation is if you take the points in f3 to the n and you color them with constant log n colors, then you get a monochromatic affine line. An affine line, of course, is a little more flexible than just combinatorial line. But again, what the truth here is, you know, who knows? Maybe constant log n. In fact, here's, you know, here's an affine line here, 0, 1, 2, or 0, 2, 1. You can use the same idea for the following theorem. Namely, for every r, there's a delta and an n. So if you take two sets of real numbers of size n, and their sum set is not too large, the size at most n to the 1 plus delta, where delta is kind of like 1 over 2 to the 2 to the 2r, then you'll be able to find, in any r coloring, a monochromatic corner. That is 3 points for the form AB, A prime B, AB prime. Of course, I'd love to get the fourth point, but that's for the end. And in fact, more generally, you can get, by interpreting this binary tree and kind of projecting it down to the axes, you actually get these so-called Hilbert cubes. Namely, A and B will both have a translate of the same Hilbert cube. A Hilbert cube just means you have numbers A1 up to AM and all possible subset sums with some translate. So each A and B will both have different translates of that, where again, M is about log N. Now let me mention a few questions here. I'd love to be able to complete the square. For example, with this technique, Shormash and I showed that if you just take N cross N and you color with fewer than constant log N colors, then you always get this monochromatic corner. And if you have a corner, you can project these things to get three-term arithmetic progressions or things that are have somewhat different spacing, if you like. Can you use these bounds or this technique to get that fourth point, A prime, B prime, to get the square? Getting that fourth point seems tough. Similarly, if the diagonals of N cube are R colored and R is at most constant log N, is it true that you get a monochromatic, well, I guess constant log N would be enough, monochromatic, the fourth diagonal? Or what about just a four cycle, actually, which is even a little less restrictive? What are the density analogs for these results? You know, Shredov has a nice density theorem for corners, for n by n, where if you have a density, you know, n over log n, then you're going to get a corner. You know, what's the story for squares? There is something known about this set. What is this? These are six diagonals spanned by four coplanar vertices of n cubed. So you're going to, for example, two-color the diagonals of an n cube, and you're asking for four points that lie in a plane so that all six diagonals are the same color. There's no density theorem here, for example, because there's no odd cycle in a cube. And so there is a way you can pick, if you chose all the diagonals so the endpoints have odd weight when you sum the Hamming sum, then the Hamming distance is odd, then you won't get a monochromatic one of these at all. So how big is M0? Well, let's talk about big numbers. You need a little notation. 3 arrow N is 3 to the N. This is due to Knuth. 3 double arrow means there are N3s here. If you kind of expand it out, okay, so that's not a bad number. Triple arrow, you iterate the double arrow with N3s and so forth, so to get kind of a feel for this. 3 single arrow 3 is 27. 3 double arrow 3 is 3 to the 27th. Well, it's a big number. Triple arrow is a little bit larger. It's 3 double arrow of this, which is a tower of 3s of height, whatever. So the best known estimate for M0, as you'll notice, every additional arrow can make kind of a big difference, whether it's 2 arrows or 3 arrows. So if you do 4 arrows, that's a pretty big number. Remember, every arrow makes a big difference. That's the number of arrows you put between these 3s, which is the number of arrows between these 3s. And you do this for 64 levels. It's kind of a big number. And that's the best estimate that I know of for M0. Very recently, Jeff Exu, who's kind of a Ramsey theory computing specialist, got a lower bound of 11. He thinks probably it's 11. Probably 11 is the answer. Well, it used to be 6, so we've actually made pretty big progress. So there's a little room for improvement here. And now let me close with kind of a cartoon that I like a lot that kind of captures what we all do here. So this is our guy with an idea. Okay, it's looking pretty good. Okay, good. Yes, that's good. Okay, now it's coming along. Okay, let's go to work. Okay, come on over here. Here's the expert. Okay, start with another idea. Okay, anyway, so as I say, this was an attempt to use kind of fairly elementary methods to try to get some realistic bounds. Like, you know, double logarithm is not bad, but as soon as you, if you try, for example, three-dimensional corners is a very tempting thing, because if you can get three-dimensional corners in a grid, you can project to get four-term progressions. And you need some density theorem, like Shredov, for the corners in a two-dimensional grid, which is log-log, and as soon as you iterate this argument, get towers of height 2R, say, which is kind of, you know, which you don't believe that's the truth, but I don't know. So anyway, nobody complained about a talk that was too short, so I think with that, that's all I have to say.